Hi, I'm Paul Johnson. Thanks for listening to the podcast from Life Support.
I was born and raised in what I call a pseudo-Christian cult. And the reason I call it that is because I was taught that I was Christian. So if anyone asked me, oh, what religion are you? I would say I was Christian. I really truly believed that.
Today's guest was a longtime victim of spiritual abuse. But through the grace of God, Naomi was able to rise above her circumstances and is now helping others who experience many forms of spiritual abuse. An incredible journey next on Life Support.
Everything you do from then on is different.
One of the detectives, I think his name was
Derek. He was a golden boy.
All we can do right now is come together.
Extreme domestic violence. Multiple rapes.
Hey, it's so good to have you on Life Support. What we do on this program is we love to tell stories, but not just any story. We talk about how Jesus intervenes in some of our darkest times, during suffering, during trauma, during difficult things that we go through. And we've got a very, very special guest today that's going to help us see more of Christ. Her name is Naomi Wright. She's with Be Emboldened. And so, Naomi, thanks a lot for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for allowing me the opportunity to connect with you and your guests.
So tell me a little bit about Be Emboldened. Where did that title come from?
Oh, well, that's kind of funny because there's a lot of pressure coming up with a name for an organization. At least I felt it was a lot of pressure. And so when I originally founded the organization, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to make it my name because I don't know what to name it. I don't know. And I was launching with my story. But then it quickly was more than just my story, which was incredible. And I'm like, well, it doesn't make sense to have this be my name anymore. It's not the Naomi Show. Like, this is something else. So what is our goal for people? What do we want the experience to be? Like, what do we want to help people do or be? And I love where Joshua is told repeatedly in the Old Testament to be strong and courageous. And when I heard the word emboldened and looked it up, it means to be strong and courageous. And so that's where I came up with the name from. And it's so funny because now I hear clients tell me regularly, I feel so emboldened as they're ready to, you know, move forward from services with Be Emboldened. And they're like, we sound like we're like just saying the word. I'm like, no, it means we picked the right the right name. This is great.
That is great. One thing that caught my eye on your website was the terminology harmful religious experiences. And that obviously plays into your story. So tell me about that.
Sure. So my background, I ended up with a bit of a buffet of harmful experiences, but the most significant and longstanding would be my upbringing. So I was born and raised in what I call a pseudo-Christian cult. And the reason I call it that is because I was taught that I was Christian. So if anyone asked me, oh, what religion are you? I would say I was Christian. I really truly believed that. But I found out over time, and really not fully until I was 28, where it really clicked, oh my goodness, that was not true Christianity. In fact, it was very much not true Christianity. And a lot of pieces then fell into place for me that I didn't know what to do with previously. So my dad had been the founder and the leader of this particular cult group. And again, I was raised that it was the true Christianity. So that idea, we hear this often in cults, that it's sort of this elite group. And we are the true Israelites, we're the real ones, we're that small remnant, so to speak. And we're the ones who are doing it, quote unquote, right. And there were quite a few teachings that were problematic. But some of the main ones that people can typically hear and be like, oh, yeah, that for sure is a problem, versus some that maybe are a little bit more confusing. One would be that the older generation, so my parents and their friends, would not and could not die. So we were for sure going to walk into the new heavens and the new earth together. And so that was never a thought for me, that I was going to be dealing with the death of my parents. And my dad died when I was 21 and my mom died when I was 25. So that was shocking. A complicated grief that therapists don't know what to do with, because that's not normal. And then another really problematic teaching was that my dad was likened to John the Baptist prior to Jesus's coming the first time. So he was likened to John the Baptist, but before Jesus would be coming the third time, because supposedly he had already come a second time in someone else, in the form of someone else, and the world had kind of missed him, so to speak. And so that, of course, is problematic. when you hold it up against true Christianity. And the group was polygamous. So my dad had many wives. I have a lot of half siblings. And that was really difficult growing up with that dynamic because I was in public school. So I wasn't off the grid in a compound or a commune. I was right out there in plain sight, looking very differently with a lot of holiness standards and things, but having to hide that my family was my family because, of course, that was illegal. I wasn't in a state where that would be permissible as in New York State, very much not permissible for good reason in New York State.
At what age did you start to realize that your life wasn't like everyone else's?
I don't remember ever not knowing that. So I think in some way, I mean, as my earliest memories would probably be around kindergarten, aside from one or two that stand out before that. So I definitely knew pretty early on in kindergarten that I was different because I was already being coached before I went to school on what I needed to say about my family, what I could not say. So for example, if siblings were around, if they were visiting, because we were in different states, not all of us were in the same state. And so if we were all together around the holidays or Christmas, you know, Christmas break, summer break, I was taught to call them cousins and to call, you know, other wives, aunts and things like that. So that coaching started young. I didn't so much notice the difference in how I dressed because I did wear the long skirts, you know, had the long hair and those sorts of things. But I didn't notice that so much being young. A lot of little girls love wearing pretty dresses anyway. But I did know, well, they celebrate Christmas. We don't do that because we didn't celebrate holidays. They were all considered pagan. We didn't even really celebrate birthdays a little bit here and there, but not so much. And so we really only celebrated Thanksgiving. And I kind of joked that my dad liked a good meal. And that was probably why we did that one. But aside from that, so those kinds of things I knew pretty early on. And I was also already hearing, you know, talk about being really fearful of the world, which I think in any Christian household, we're equipping, you know, our children to know how to deal with, you know, and how to engage with a secular culture and to be a light within that culture. But I was very much being told to stay away from others because it was dangerous and more of like their sin would kind of get on me and harm me or taint me. And so I had a lot of fear of people who were not a part of our group. And so as I was getting into 7, 8, 9 years old, I started to notice, wow, I need to stay away from people. I need to have really good boundaries with friends and things like that. And recognize that I was different in those ways. I didn't recognize why it was different as I do now, of course, but yeah, I recognize those differences.
I think one part of your story that many can relate to is the hyper-legalism or the type of teaching that you were being exposed to. And that must be very, very difficult to unwind yourself from.
Yes. Yes. There was the first time I heard the word disentangled was from Ginger Duggar in her book that came out, I believe it was last year. And that word resonated so deeply for me because when I think about disentangling, I think about maybe for the ladies out there, they'll resonate with this more, but I think about like thread where it gets all tangled and it's like, it's a lot easier to just cut that off and versus getting a needle and trying to undo that knot in that piece of thread or a chain link necklace, you know, like a thin gold chain where when that gets knotted, that's tough too. You don't want to throw that out. So you kind of deal with it and you get it disentangled, but that's how tedious it is. It's really so mixed up when it's not something totally different. And I was taught that Jesus was the Messiah. I was taught that he's my Lord and Savior. And we were looking at the Bible. We weren't reading it well, but we were looking at it. And so words are confusing. Definitions are confusing. And to paint an example, it was so confusing that when I was in my mid-20s, when I first started attending a church, it was a non-denominational church. And I walked in and I was getting connected and I decided, you know, I love younger women. I would love to pour into them. And I sat down and had an hour lunch with some leadership because they were going to vet me to see, you know, if I could be a leader over this small group of women who were going to be in their early 20s. And I was approved. And it's because when they asked me basic Christian questions, my answer was yes, but our definitions were very different. And so that's how confusing it can actually be. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I believed it to be true. They believed what I was saying was true, but I didn't realize till a couple years later that, oh my goodness, I did not mean what they thought I meant, but I didn't even know it. And so that's how tricky it can be.
It seems like that's one of Satan's best strategies. He sprinkles in enough truth to make it really viable and just enough to lead us places where he kind of wants us to go. Is that what you experienced?
Yes. Yes. And I think I realized over time that it ended up being more of a sprinkling when I look at my upbringing, but I've certainly seen sprinklings after that. So I mentioned at the beginning that I've had a bit of a buffet of harmful experiences. I've also found incredibly beautiful church communities that I'm so thankful for. So by no means is this the whole story. I don't think it's the majority of what we see out there, but it is prevalent and we are seeing a lot of it. And so I'm glad that, you know, we have people like yourself who are having conversations about such an important topic that's affecting our church. So my husband and I ended up in a work environment that was a Christian environment that was really problematic, definitely spiritual harm going on there. And so through these different kinds of experiences, I've noticed more where it can be really confusing. It is, it's that truth, and then they slip in a lie and it's like, oh, wait, hold on. And those lies aren't meant, they're not minor. They really add up and they really change who Jesus is and what the Bible's really saying. And that really messes with people's faith. And of course, the worst case scenario that we see, and we've seen it too much, I know I've seen it too much, as people then questioning, is God even someone? First of all, is God real? But if God is real, what's his character? Do I want anything to do with him and potentially leaving the faith? And that's something I care about so much, because Jesus is really who we have to turn to. And he is so good. He is what goodness and love is. And so the last thing we want is to turn away from him.
Yeah, that's the saddest part of when churches melt down or things go bad. When people just walk away and never come back. And that's tragic. It really is. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
But it happens.
It doesn't.
But it happens far too often. In your opinion, given your background and what you see now, what makes people so vulnerable to teaching that's just a little off the road? What is it inside of us that draws us to these kind of far out places, or the places that are just enough shadowy where we, you know, we get caught in these kind of things?
I see a few different reasons that could come into play, and some of it's going to depend on that person's upbringing, where they're at, their own journey with the Lord, how well equipped the deceiver is, because again, it can get really tricky in all fairness. And so I want to say that I think we have room for improvement in the church to really equip people to be able to read their Bibles well for themselves, you know, proper exegetical skills and hermeneutics and application. It's just really important. And so that's something that isn't hit on so much. I know there's been a lot of improvement out there. I know that I'm a part of a lot of different conversations where we're teaching apologetics and we're teaching good biblical studies, theological studies. And so I'm excited to see where this goes for coming generations, but it's been tough. It's been an area where there's been some lack. And so I think that gives people a lot of room to deceive us, because if we go to scripture and we check, it might look like what the person said is in there if we don't know how to read well. And so that gets really confusing. We need a bit more equipping to be able to really check what people are saying. Something else that can come into play as well is how someone is doing internally with their spiritual health, their emotional health, their mental health. If someone has a real need that is not being met, and someone is offering a solution, they're offering to meet that need, they may be more apt to maybe dismiss flags, dismiss concerns, because it's something that, gosh, wow, this is just so good, or I just really have been wanting this. And it's so cruel, because they're good needs, they're good things, they're out of our design. For a sense, say for example, a sense of community, and we walk in and we're getting love bombed, and people are so overwhelmingly loving and caring and want to see us and want to know us and want, gosh, that can feel so good. And again, that's a part of how we're designed to be in community with one another, but it can be capitalized on. And so there's that need for discernment, that need for critical thinking, for taking it slow and really getting to know what we're stepping into. And there's times where I have had to step away from having a need met that is a good, valid need, because I'm like, this isn't the way to have it met. And that self-discipline, I think, to say, you know what, I might need to suffer a little bit longer in this area because I want it to be met in a real genuine way that's going to be God-honoring and that isn't going to hurt me in some other way.
Yeah, that's really wise. I think as a pastor, I'm always in this kind of doing this tightrope walk where I want people to do what you had said earlier. I want them to develop Bible study skills that are really helpful and keep them where they should be, find the right teachers, which is always a challenge as well. And that can be a little bit fraught with danger too, because you don't want to just steer them toward one, you know, one sort of stream. On the other hand, I want the actions that come out of that to be real and genuine and not conceited and puffed up. Well, I'll probably get in trouble on our KTIS network here, but some of the most difficult people in the church are those that are steeped in the Bible. And they've learned it. They almost memorized it. But yet their actions, you kind of look at them and go, huh, interesting, you know, that you went to Bible study your whole life. So as you're working with people that that are your clients, how do you kind of walk that balance between knowledge, working it out in love, loving Jesus to actually just love Jesus, not to necessarily do it out of duty? How does that work for you?
So, gosh, you made me think of a couple things. It actually made me think of my upbringing first. And if I may jump back there for a second.
Yeah, please do.
The legalism that came out of it, because even though what we were taught and what I knew to be quote unquote true actually wasn't, we were still really knowledgeable in what our faith system was. And so I can use that sort of as a comparison point. We can be really knowledgeable, and yet if we are not continuing in our sanctification and our hearts and minds are not becoming more conformed to Christ, hearts too, not only minds, and we're not developing that Christ-like character, we can start to see a real discrepancy. And it sounds like that might be what you're speaking to. Does that sound right?
Yeah. It's kind of like you were learning a biblical system that wasn't necessarily the heart of the Bible almost. Mm-hmm. And that can be a dangerous place to go, because then you're going to be led astray and people become legalistic and it's just not a healthy place to be. But I do see that in churches as well. And it's not nearly, it's much more subtle a lot of times than what you're talking about, but it's definitely there. And it's concerning.
Yes. And coming alongside so many people who are not only from a cult background, but mainstream denominational churches where different abuses have happened, and they can come away. And if it was more of that legalistic, if it was more of like, make sure that, you know, you're doing this and doing that. And I'm not saying there's no room for that, right? We're talking about taking things too far or focusing only in one area and totally forgetting the other area. When that happens, it can be a really tough transition for someone, because there can be a lot of fear of any missteps. There can be a lot of fear of having a learning process or having a learning curve, because people can think, well, oh my goodness, like what if, for example, they were attending a church and they went through spiritual abuse, they had these kinds of experiences, maybe some other forms of abuse wrapped up within spiritual abuse. We certainly see that happen, like sexual abuse, physical abuse. Whether or not that was the case, they come away and they're like, okay, well, while I'm looking for another church, maybe I don't have my feet under me yet to even know what to look for. Like, what is healthy? What is actually a God-honoring church? What is good theology and those sorts of things? And yet, if I'm not in a church right away, well, is that sinful? Is God gonna, Is he going to forgive me? Am I outside of his will? And so coming alongside people gently and companioning with them and hopefully showing them the patience and the gentleness and the kindness that we know that God has, while also holding on to, it is good to be a part of a community. It is good to gather and worship together. And yet you might not be able to do that this Sunday. In fact, if you go do it this Sunday, I'm concerned you're going to jump from one hot boiling pot of water to another one because you're not yet sure how to discern and how to evaluate and how to ask good questions and what to look at. And so let's help get your feet under you so we avoid re-victimization. And that's going to take some time because what I oftentimes tell people is your mind is likely going to get there before the rest of you does. Because trauma is a real thing and it has a real physiological impact on our bodies. And we can change that. Thank God, literally. Thank you, Lord, that we're able to change that. It's so good and so hopeful. But it is going to take some time and it's going to take some repetition. And so just kind of settling in and knowing something I told my husband when I was going through a lot of this, because he's very worried. Of course, he married me, poor man. I don't mean that in the way it sounded, but in the beginning, it's paying off for him now. But in the beginning, he was thinking like, oh my goodness, I know because he's told me this. I love this woman. I married her. But 4 months in is when I realized I had been raised in a cult and I was really struggling to be in a church. And he's thinking, what's going to happen? Is she going to turn towards atheism? Is she going to leave? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And this poor guy kind of, you know, going through this, you never have experience to go through this. And so he's going through this. And I remember telling him, just remember that I really, truly love the Lord. And I really do want to know him. And I believe he is faithful and he is in this with me. This is going to work out okay. I know it's not what we thought it was going to look like, but just know I'm not giving up. And I know he's not going to give up on me. So this is going to work out. It's just going to take time.
Good words for today. Tell me what Be Emboldened does.
So Be Emboldened, I founded it based on just my story. I really felt like the Lord was saying to share what he's done for me. And that aligns with scripture because we always want to check what we think the Lord's saying to us against scripture. And it does say, you know, share your testimony. And that was something, honestly, I never wanted to do. Because there's a lot of baggage attached to my testimony. It's not a fun story to tell. It's not fun to talk about. It's hard to talk about. And yet it's really good. And I recognize that as long as I get to tell it all the way through the end, it's amazing and it's empowering. If I don't tell it all the way through to now, it's pretty sad. And so I'm like, oh my goodness, like telling this is going to be hard. There's going to be real implications with family that I have that's still living. And sure enough, you know, I got cut off from some of them who are still a part of the group, which I understand. And this is just a big, bold move, Lord. And yet, my goodness, that is the least I can do for what you have done for me. And so I started out with just a blog and a YouTube channel. Definitely didn't want to get in front of a screen and get on a microphone. That's for sure. And the vision just kind of kept coming for it from there. And I don't mean that in a spiritual vision, but just like the ideas and like, wow, what can we do with this? And really started to see where different experiences I had, the degrees that I held, the different job experience I had, work experience, how it was all kind of coming together in ways that would allow me to come alongside other people. And I remember going to a professor at the seminary I was attending at the time and telling him, I think I want to step into this area and serve, that I want this to be a ministry area that I work in. And he told me something that I thought was really, it was profound for me at the time. And I believe he was absolutely correct. He said, well, Naomi, I think that'd be great. You know, it's a wonderful endeavor to take on. It's as messy. Serving in that area is as messy as the abuse itself. It's a real messy area to step into. And I've seen that. It is a messy area to step into. We have a lot of confusion within the church about spiritual abuse. We've got a long way to go just with educating on what it is, how it affects people, things like that, which is why I'm so grateful for people like yourself who are bringing light to this subject. And so I knew that kind of going in, like, okay, this is going to be a bit messy. It also means that there isn't enough solid hubs for resources. And that's what I want to do with this. I want it to be a solid hub where people know they can go, they can find other resources, they can take courses, they can be a part of different group gatherings, they can get one-on-one services from professionals who get it, they've lived it, they're also trained, theologically trained, support professional trained. And I want it to be a hub. And that's what we've created so far, is people can come to us, they can get one-on-one services, which we call mentoring services. And they can meet if it's two-on-one, if they've, you know, if they're married or they have a partner or friend they came out with. We meet with groups of people who have left around similar times, 10, 12, 15 people. We travel to people. We do a lot virtually.
Good for you. So it's beemboldened.com?
Yes, beemboldened.com.
That's great. I'm looking forward to talking to you more. Thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it a lot.
Absolutely.
And listen, if you're listening and you need help, just go there right now, beemboldened.com. And remember that you can watch a video version of this podcast too if you want to just get re-engaged at fivestonemedia.com. Thank you so much for listening to Life Support.
Thanks for listening to this Life Support podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Life Support, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of Life Support.